It's a residency at the House of M's.
This is Triple M Nights with Dave Gleeson.
I'm so excited to be talking to our next guest. I met him a few years ago on the Variety Bash as we travelled from Queensland to Alice Springs on the 20th anniversary of the Variety Bash. If you do get a chance to donate to Variety, a great, great cause they are. Leo Sayer has had massive hits around the world, won Grammys, and he's even an Australian citizen. So we're going to catch up with him now. Haven't got you at a bad time, have we, Leo?
Oh, that's all good. How you doing, bro?
I'm very well, mate.
Love the Angels t-shirt.
Oh, yeah, cool, mate. Yes, yes, always representing. It's either Angels or Jets on the t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. You've probably got Jets on the back, you know.
What I do is when I'm on tour with each band, I wear that band's t-shirt specifically so I don't get confused.
You could put yourself in the zone. You know? Yeah.
Always in the zone. Leo, it's so great to have you on the show, mate.
Good, man. A pleasure.
I've met you years ago. Well, I think I first met you when we were doing the Variety Bash.
That's correct.
Across to Alice Springs.
Yeah, absolutely. Wasn't that mad? I've just been writing my book. I'm doing my memoirs at the minute, and I just got past the Variety Bash. My lovely friends Rita and Peter, we had car number 23, which was like a big old Holden limo, the kind of thing. The kind of thing that would have picked me up at the airport when I first came in 75. Yeah.
So 1975, you made it. So you'd been performing for a good few years before that.
52 years altogether it is. Yeah, bloody hell. Man.
Tell us about your early success in the UK and the US. What was that like for a young bloke from small town England?
It was amazing. Yeah, to come from Shoreham-by-Sea on the south coast of England. And, you know, I mean, there was pretty much the first album, Silverbird, which had The Show Must Go On it. And I was dressed in white face as the Pierrot on TV. And then, you know, we went off to after getting success in the UK, the album went to number two, my very first debut album. So it was all pretty hot. And we went off to the States, where Three Dog Night had covered The Show Must Go On. And ridiculously, they were singing, "We Must Let the Show Go On," when the lyrics were, "I won't let the show go on." But that's another story. Yeah. But we got there and the tour went gangbusters. It was crazy. We were playing mostly kind of clubs, you know, the Troubadour, the Bottom Line, the boarding house in San Francisco, lots of crazy places. And I'd often be on, sometimes supporting really great acts, you know. So you kind of learnt. The first gig I did, I was supporting J.J. Cale, would you believe?
Well, see,
yeah, which was...
There wasn't such a delineation, was there? There wasn't like genre delineation like we have now, was there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, one of the gigs I was on with Herbie Hancock, and you couldn't have two more different artists, you know, in what I was doing, what he was doing. But there wasn't really that kind of, I don't know, rap jobbing, I call it, you know. And in radio now, everything is so pre-programmed, isn't it, that you can't play a Screaming Jets song on a Leo Sayer playlist, you know. It's like, and it's frustrating because sometimes, like you're doing now, I get a chance to be a DJ, and then you kind of like, they say, well, play anything you like when they come in, of course. And and then as soon as you get there, there's a playlist, and it's like, well, I wanted to play Bob Dylan, but you've only got Lay Lady Lay here. You know, it's like, it gets disappointing. You can't really, you know, things are very much computer controlled these days anyway. But those days, yeah, they were fantastic. I mean, you know, and I used to record the radio over there, you know, and you'd have gospel, country, blues, jazz, pure rock, you know, old rock and roll, old R&B, you know, like the bebop singers and everything like that. And it would all be there on the radio and it would all clash. It would all kind of move into each other, all on the same station.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting. Yeah, it was so exciting.
Now, and speaking of R&B, you won an R&B Grammy for You Make Me Feel Like Dancing.
Yeah, it was. It was the R&B Song of the Year on the Grammys. And I wrote it with a guy called Vinnie Poncia. Well, actually, he only really wrote a little bit of it because it was put together in a jam session in the studio. Jeff Beccaro on drums, Ray Parker Jr. on guitar, Larry Carlton on, you know, just a good little band. And we were jamming basically in Richard Perry's studio. We were making an album called Endless Flight in 1976. And we were really just jamming, and it was like, why, you know, in the old days, he used to change the reels of tape, and it would take ages, you know, to kind of do all this studio. So we're just jamming away while they're break. And Richard just, in the control room, Richard Perry, producer, just sort of said, get that tape on now, this is great, record that. And so he was recording that, and then like a month later, he played it back to me and just said, that's your hit. Because wow. I think he knew... It was a crossover, you know, it would kind of like they would use all the black market, you know, the R&B and that kind of market to sell it. And for a lot of people, when the record eventually came out, people thought I was black.
Yeah, right.
They didn't realize I was a white artist because this silly voice, you know, and the groove of it, it was kind of, you know, disco before disco. And yeah, it was a massive hit.
Unreal.
It's funny when I went to the funny when a story when I went to the Grammys, I kind of I flew over and I missed my connection, and I just got there a little bit too late. I walk into the theater where they're announcing the Grammys, and I'm sitting down beside Count Basie and Johnny Guitar Watson in between. And I remember Count Basie to me and said, son, you just won a Grammy. And that was how I found out. You know?
That's amazing.
Which I thought was as cool as if I'd have got up there, you know, Count Basie's patting me on the shoulder saying, you won it. Yeah. He said, fantastic. You must be important, man. And I go, this is the Count.
And of course you've had, as you were talking about, Three Dog Night, but also Roger Daltrey. So you've had that, you've always had that connection to the rock industry through your songwriting.
Well, yeah. I mean, we met Roger while making that first album in 1973. Or was it 72 maybe? And then we got invited to go to his studio. He had a recording studio that he built near his house in Sussex. And I come from Sussex, so it wasn't too far. And he met through a guy, a publicist and rock writer called Keith Altham, who used to write for the New Musical Express in the old days. He was publicist for The Who. And he came to us and we had a bit of a log jam because we'd already started recording, you know, the album in Richard Branson's studio called The Manor in Oxfordshire.
Manor, yeah.
And we were kind of like halfway through and we needed another studio. And he said, look, Keith Altham came to Adam Faith. Well, Adam Faith was my manager, who also was a pop singer, of course, from the 50s and 60s. And Keith at one time was his publicist as well. So here's the publicist of The Who coming to us and saying, hey, look, Roger's built a studio and he needs a guinea pig. He needs someone to go down there and try it out. So you're looking for a studio. Why don't we give him a call? They gave him a call. And then Adam and Roger found out that they both were born on the same street in Acton, in England. So all the connections, you know, all the stars were aligning, man. You know, you can see it. So we go up there, get on great with Roger. I mean, he used to do crazy things. Like we'd go up to, I had a band, and it, in between the making the, you know, the record at Roger's, he'd kind of go and get Mitch Mitchell's, Jimi Hendrix's old PA. We'd go up to Mitch Mitchell's house, which was just up the road, and Roger would load it all up in his Range Rover, and he'd come and do the sound at the gigs. How weird is that? You know, people say, your sound man looks just like Roger Daltrey. I said, yeah, funny that, isn't it? Yeah.
Unreal.
And and everybody go up to him and he'd say, go away. I'm working for Leo. Go away. halfway through, he asked us if we had some songs. I think he wanted to outdo Pete Townsend because Pete Townsend had made a solo album.
Right, yep.
And he said, you know, what? It's going to break up The Who if I don't do the same. So, yeah, he asked us to write him a bunch of songs and we pretty much already have them. So, yeah, we gave him Giving It All Away amongst one man band as well. He recorded first guy to record those. Adam Faith and David Courtney, my co-writer on all those things, produced the album just like they produced my album. And they put it out first, and which was great because Roger became, as well as being my roadie, he became my PR man. So he'd go to the States, you know, do gigs and say, and they'd say, well, we love your new album. And he'd say, yeah, but wait till you hear the guy, wait till you meet the guy who wrote it. So fantastic. He was fantastic. He's still a mate. you know, we still talk all the time. He's still a great guy. Yeah. Unreal, on tour, Roger's on tour in England at the moment, actually.
Yeah.
Doing solo gigs.
It's fantastic. I get Classic Rock magazine or one of
the UK
magazines, and there's all the bands, all those artists, they're still on tour over there.
Everybody's working,
yeah,
man. Yeah,
I know.
Andy
Fevergillo
and my old mate is out there on the road at the minute, and I'm just about to I leave next week to go to the UK, actually.
Right.
And I'm touring in at the end of August I'm doing Ireland, and then September, October and November I'm touring the UK over 3 months. Got about 35 gigs. So I guess I'll see them all out there. You know,
unreal.
All coming back. Sad to say, I don't know when I'm going to get to Australia, but hopefully next year.
Mate, we hope so too. Now, and what is it? I mean, you say 52 years. I saw you 5 or 6 weeks ago. You still have this amazing energy, this great connection with the crowd, you can tell that you love doing it. What is it about it that makes you just love it?
Well, I've got to say, for you to say that, Dave, I'm really honoured, because I think you're probably one of the greatest frontmen in Australia.
Oh, thank you very much.
A great rock and roll singer. And when you get on stage, you just take over the place. And you've got that thing that Michael Hutchence had, you know, where it's just a pure rock singer.
Oh, thanks.
A pure rock voice. And so I'm honoured that you think that. But it's, I don't know, it's just what happens to us? The adrenaline kicks in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We get up there. I mean, I'm writing my book, and the last chapter, which I've just finished, I end up with me going on stage. And I say, basically, I'm home, because where I live is between the drum riser and the front apron, and the front monitors. And I'm sure you feel the same.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the time, you know, we're gassing now, you know, we're talking about things but we'd love people to see what we really do, wouldn't we? I mean, you know, that's, if you want to see what I do, that's me. And if you want to see Dave Gleason, you know, you see him with the Screaming Jets or the Angels, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm 74 now and I've got 3 stents in my heart. Yeah. I've got like a partial kneecap replacement from falling over. I have a great therapist who does deep tissue work.
Right, yeah.
And I see him all the time, and he's always working on me and trying to extend my neck from the falling off stage in 1977.
Yeah, I've read about that.
And doing all those things. But bloody hell, I'm still going, mate.
And
as soon as I get up there, you forget all that shit. You know, you just do it, don't you?
Yeah, mate. I did film some footage of you singing. And unfortunately, I ruined it because you can hear me singing in the background. We're going to be playing a bit of that later on. But
that was a great little gig that we did for Support Act.
Yeah, yeah.
In Adelaide, wasn't it? The Barton.
The Thebe.
It was
yeah.
great to see you again, Dave. The Thebe.
Thebe, mate. Well,
I always call it. See, I'm English. I call it the Barton.
It's a well-known mistake, Leo.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time, mate.
Great pleasure, buddy.
One more thing I wanted to ask about Australia.
Absolutely.
What happened? Why did you decide that this was where you're going to lay down some roots?
Well, I came out here that first tour in 1975, May 75. Paul Dainty was the promoter. And Michael Chugg was my road manager, my tour manager. You can only imagine. I mean, he used to say, he had his long, tall glasses. Well, he used to come on, he used to do this kind of race call kind of intro, which is, you know, very much his history. So he'd say, he's a one-man band. He's not going to give it all away. You wait till the show goes on, you know, and then I walk on. So it was a fantastic tour. Reg Ansett was the big promoter as well. So that was fantastic because he was flying us everywhere on Ansett Airlines in those days, you know. And so, I don't know, it just left an indelible mark on me. I fell in love with the country. And look, you know me, I'm a bit of a loud and extrovert kind of character.
Mate, I've seen you on tables.
In England, they'd all...
I've seen you up on tables at on the Big Bash.
Exactly. So in England, you can imagine, they're all telling me to shut up and sit down. Whereas Australia, you come over here and immediately, ye spanker, Leo, come on. Yeah. I just got that straight away. And it was extraordinary. So basically, Dave, I fell in love with the place. And I made myself a little promise, because at the end of the tour, Reg flew us around to a few. He said, choose where you want to go. So I said, Cable Beach. You know, I want to see The Rock. I want to see all these places. So he flew us everywhere.
Wow.
And by that time, I'd made my mind up that one day in the future, I was going to come and live in Australia. This was my place. And this was what suited me better than ever. So that was it. The mind was made up in 1975. So 2005, I moved in a little bit later. But I've been, I really think of this as home. I'm going back to the UK, of course, next week. Go to Rome and then fly on to the UK. But I'll tell you, I'll be a tourist, Dave.
Yeah,
I'll be a tourist. Unreal. Where I live is Australia. This is my home.
Thank you so much. Well, we love having you here, Leo. And thanks for your time, mate. Love you. And hopefully see you somewhere soon. And have a great time over in Europe.
Great. Love to everybody in Adelaide. And you keep it up, Dave.
Cheers, mate.
We'll sing
Leo.
On stage soon together again.
I can't wait.